Hello, this is Bob Baker, and I want to welcome you to episode 70 of Artist Empowerment Radio Podcast. That's right, episode 70, the big 7-0. And it's a good one because it features part 3, the third and final installment of a 3-part interview that I did with Brian Thompson of Thorny Bleeder Records and the DIY Daily and the Music Biz Weekly podcast and on and on. We spent over an hour actually on Skype like a month or so ago, and some great stuff. I didn't want to give you an hour-long interview, so I split it up into roughly 20-minute segments. And this one is all about the nuts and bolts of music marketing and social media, primarily geared for musicians, of course, but regardless of whatever discipline you are in a creative field or whatever, I think you'll get a lot out of this interview. And I'm even more excited about this third installment because earlier today, as I was finishing editing this final segment, I actually had another conversation with Brian that we did not record. It was offline. But we talked about putting together a package that we are going to release. The target date is Saturday, June 2nd, to release something that we are calling DIY Music Marketing for Serious Musicians. Now, DIY, of course, stands for do-it-yourself. The focus of this thing will be music marketing. It's for serious musicians. Not that you can't be lighthearted and have fun, because you should have fun when you're doing all this marketing and creativity stuff, but it's for people that are really serious about their music marketing and want to get into the nitty-gritty of what it takes to promote yourself, to connect with fans, to engage with people, and build a tribe of supporters who will follow you throughout your music career and help you build a long-term music career. I won't go into all the details now. More of those will be coming between now and June 2nd, but I will tell you that the main sort of a feature of this package that we're putting together is a 90-minute private teleclass that I did actually for a select group of my own readers and customers, where I invited Brian to be a guest. And the main meat of this conference call that we did was called 10 Things Every Musician Should Know About Guerrilla Music Marketing. And it was a private teleclass that I did for people that pre-ordered the new 2012 edition of my Guerrilla Music Marketing Handbook. But we not only covered those 10 topics in great detail, but we also answered some live questions during the call. And so, and it really went well. I mean, we just packed so much information into it. And even though it was intended for this private group, I quickly realized that, man, this message, this information, these ideas really need to get out to a wider audience of aspiring musicians. And so that's why we decided to put together this DIY music marketing package. This also includes hour-long plus live workshops that Brian gave on music marketing and social media. I also include a rare workshop that I did on guerrilla music marketing and some other goodies. Again, I won't reveal all the details here, but if you're on the Buzz Factor mailing list, you'll certainly be the first to know when we launch that on June 2nd. Another quick thing, if you've just recently come across Artist Empowerment Radio and maybe you're listening to your first episode, or maybe you're a regular listener, but maybe you've, you know, kind of been off the map or outside of iTunes for a while. If you haven't listened to parts 1 and 2, I highly recommend that you go back and listen to them. You don't have to listen to them in order, but in the first one, which is episode 68, it's basically a lot about Brian's background. And we talk about career transition, which a lot of people are going through or have gone through, with the economy the way it's been in recent years. And so it's part of Brian's story, but it's something that everyone can relate to who's gone through a career transition. In the second part, episode 69, we talk about the power of positive thinking, something that's near and dear to my heart as well as Brian's, and how that relates to artist development. And then here in part 3, we talk more about the nuts and bolts of music marketing and social media. Each of them can stand on their own. You don't have to listen to the other ones, but if you'd like to get the full, you know, flow of things, go back to episode 68, then 69, and then come back to 70 here. However you consume it, I think you're really going to enjoy this. And here's the rest of my interview with Brian Thompson right on the other side of this little music sample from Soul Massage. We'll be right back.
So marketing, of course, is the topic I'm most known for. I mean, I've dished out plenty of advice over the years and tactics on marketing.
You've written a blog post or two on it.
Yeah, a couple of little passages here and there. So actually, this is a great opportunity for me to take a rest and maybe be on the listening end. But I know marketing is a subject that you have been involved in and have written and spoken about too. So I just want to ask you what's been on your mind lately regarding marketing. And there's maybe two different aspects. One is just like when you are talking to maybe mid-level artists or people on the verge of being ready to break out or whatever, you know, what are some nuts and bolts things, like advice that you give to them? And then I also want to ask you about some like emerging trends and things that people should be aware of. Let's start with the nuts and bolts stuff.
Well, a lot of it is very basic. You need to have a website, and that's I know it's so obvious, but every week I encounter artists who don't have a website, or they do have a website and it's 8 years old or 4 years old, and they don't. And there's no news feed. There's no blog. Having a blog is so important for any band. So I can't say enough about that. It shows that you're active. It shows that you're present. It shows that you care. It shows that you embrace your fans and that you want to share things with them. And it's so much more important than Facebook or Twitter, because this is, you're branding your own home online. This is yours. It's, you own it.
It can't be taken away from you.
Yeah.
Like a Facebook profile or something. Can
exactly.
It?
Or like a MySpace going under, you know, sinking. I mean, this is, I shouldn't even have to say it, but I do. So I have to, every time I talk, I have to say, you need a website, you need a blog, you need to embrace blogging. It's very important.
And let me ask you, Brian, from the blogging perspective, what if a musician or an artist doesn't feel like they're a strong writer, you know, as far as the written word? Are there ways to blog without being a Hemingway?
By all means. I think, that's a widely misconceived term, blogging. A lot of people think that blogging means you have to write a story, or you have to write an 8-paragraph dissertation on some concept that you have or whatever. Blogging could be a photo with a caption underneath it. Blogging could be a verse from the lyric that you just wrote last night. Blogging could be a video, a 30-second video of you kicking your drummer in the nuts. Blogging could be... Blogging could be a photo of the stir fry you made last night. I don't care what it is. You don't have to be an amazing writer. It's just an extension of your creativity. And so many artists, pretty much every artist, walks into blogging with this attitude of, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to write. I'm not a good writer. This isn't me. I shouldn't have to do this. But you know what? It's an extension of your creativity. And if you embrace it as such, you can have fun with it, and you can be, if you're as creative with blogging as you are with the recording of your music, then you're going to have success with it.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, I've often said that, a very similar thing, where I said if you can be just as creative with marketing and promotion and sales as you do with the art form. There's a lot of people in their minds, they categorize marketing as this business thing, and they feel like they have to shift. And there's even experts out there that will tell people, you can't do marketing with the same mindset as a musician. And I disagree with that. I think music is a lot more mathematical and analytical than people, the non-musicians, realize. So musicians do have analytical minds, and then marketing should be fun and creative, an extension of the creative process.
Especially in 2012, when marketing is social. It's much more social than it ever has been. Marketing is not advertising. In fact, advertising is dead. Advertising will not work for your band unless you've already sold, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand albums. Then maybe advertising might help you. But until then, it's all about marketing. And marketing is everything. It's every tweet. It's every post. It's every photo. It's every tour. It's everything you do is marketing. So for people to say, I'm not good at marketing, then you're already, again, you're dooming yourself. So
right.
You have to embrace it and accept that if you want to pursue a career in music, rather than just release a record that no one hears, then yeah, you do have to do things to make yourself stand out more.
Very cool. Any other nuts and bolts?
Other nuts and bolts. It's very important for bands to, you can just punch into Google direct to fan music marketing and chase down that dragon. Direct to fan is kind of a buzzword in the past couple of years, but it's very relevant. What it essentially means is collecting emails from your fans. Again, because you don't own your Facebook profile, you don't own your Twitter followers, but you can have a database that you own that is of people's direct connections to their email addresses. And the best way to collect email addresses is sharing free music with them, or sharing something for free in exchange for an email address, or even just going to shows with a clipboard after you get off stage saying, hey, give me your email address. I'm going to start sending you some free stuff or whatever. So I think nuts and bolts of basic music marketing today are, create your website as the central hub, which everything else can spin off of. Blog, embrace social media, be creative in everything you do online and offline. On stage and off stage. Embrace sharing content instead of demanding people pay for it, because giving something helps create an environment where people want to give you something back, such as an email address or sharing your music with their friends, or it just creates an open environment. It helps deepen that connection between artist and fan. So yeah, sharing, giving away stuff for free, collecting an email address, and then using direct-to-fan marketing to keep your fans up to date with what you're doing and how they can help.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been preaching it for years. I know Ariel Hyatt is a big proponent of this too. Your email list or your database of fans is your number one marketing asset. And I don't know why artists will overlook that. But yeah, so I'm so glad that we reemphasized that. And then direct to fan, even though that's a relatively new term, you know, there's probably a country song here, but I've been preaching direct to fan long before it was cool.
Oh, I bet. I remember
I have a diagram that I used like 10 years ago where it showed like the artist on one side, a fan image on the other, and in the middle it was just like this big bubble of that was the music industry. And I would point out how artists usually would focus on attracting the industry attention to get to the other side where the fan was. And I said, why not just do an end around, almost like a football diagram. It just seemed so obvious to me years ago,
Totally. And, like you said, it's nothing new. It's just become more fashionable to more of a buzzword to use. But one of the first things that I can remember actually witnessing at my own home as a result of direct-to-fan marketing was a girlfriend I had many years ago in the early 90s was a huge fan of the new age artist Lorena McKinnitt. She was signed or distributed via Warner Canada. I don't know where she was in the rest of the world, but she actually was the owner of her own record label. And so my girlfriend just loved Lorena McKinnitt. And in the back of one of her CDs, she had mail in this little coupon or whatever to join my mailing list. So she did. So then once a month, we would get at our house a newsletter from Lorena McKinnitt. Here is an artist who was, quote, signed to a major label, but was still like, the biggest bands out there weren't doing anything like this. And I watched it in person deepen the connection between my girlfriend and the artist. She just fell in love. She hung on every word. She was watching everything that she was doing. And it was a really like an aha moment. It was like, wow, that's the way to do it. That is how you create a career with longevity, by appreciating your fans, treating them as individuals, treating them as a part of as Seth Godin would say, a tribe. And she's had a very lengthy career because of it.
Yeah, and I think she's since gone indie, if I'm not mistaken. I think she might be like one of the largest woman-owned record label owners or something.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, her label was Quinlan Road, if I recall. And the reason why I recall that is because I can picture the catalog number on the spine of her CD. That's how much of a geeky music purchaser I was back in the day.
Wow. Yeah, but I think maybe she had like a distribution deal or something, but she was definitely her label, whether it was that way the whole time or maybe she went indie after a while. And I remember back in the 90s, yeah, it was her and then who's the Righteous Babe, Ani DeFranco was early path, what is the word? Trailblazers.
That's totally. I mean, she was another huge one. And they were doing what we're talking about now without the internet.
Yeah, which is amazing. It was a lot harder to do then, too. Yeah. And so anybody who complains about, the social media and the time I got to put on Facebook, it's like, I feel like a kind of an old curmudgeon, now going back in the day, but they really don't realize how easy they have it compared to the way it used to be.
The option, and that's another why I embrace positivity so much, is because the options for artists have never been greater. There is music is embraced everywhere more than it ever has, and your ability as an artist to find potential fans for your music, it's not that hard if you just work at it.
Very cool. The time has flown by here, so I don't know. is there anything like new and emerge, like anything that artists should do to just to real quickly to prepare for the future? Are there emerging trends that that you see that artists need to embrace now to prepare?
Well, you know, there's new applications and social networks and technologies that pop up every single day, and you never know which one's going to take hold and become the next big thing that people center around, but I don't really see there as being any one thing that's going to be like, okay, this is what we're going to be using next year. I think the first thing is artists need to embrace the current tool set, because I'm still finding, like, I throw a number out there, independent musicians, I'm going to say 80% still aren't embracing the current tools. So forget about what's tomorrow. How about we accept what, you know, we all recognize as being important today? Aside from that, the next most important tool is just being aware of the new tools and technologies that are popping up, because you never know when something is going to tickle your creative fancy and go, oh, that's a cool idea. We could use that, because there's, you know, dozens every week, and not all of them you should use, but maybe there's some neat little idea. Just like when, like, for example, last year, Moby launched a very cool campaign using the back-end data from Instagram. And Instagram was only months old, but a very expanding, growing new social network based on iPhone photos. So he took this brand new network and launched an entire album centered around it. And he made headlines all over the world. So by simply watching technology and news and the music tech space, he was able to break new ground with it. And we recently, even last summer, we saw another artist do something similar. Unknown artist from Australia who made, again, worldwide headlines because she did 12-hour concerts on Google Video that were seen by tens of thousands of people.
You know, Google Plus was launched last summer, and they had that thing called Hangouts. Yeah. I don't know if you're talking about Hangouts or Google Videos.
Google Hangouts. Yeah, yeah. She was she did like a 12-hour concert. I can't remember the artist's name.
Is it Daria Musk? Oh. She's the one that I'm aware of. Who, and I thought she might have been in the States though. So remember, there's more than one. But I was just gonna mention. Yeah, whenever there's a new buzz worthy social media site, you could be the first person to do X, you know, with the new site. That's one. It's kind of a roll of the dice for that to take off and become viral. But
not even being the first. I mean, it could be. I think everything influences one another. So you can take someone else's great idea and put your own spin on it, and all of a sudden it is new. I mean, that's what art is anyway, right? Like, nothing's new. It's all been ripped off by someone.
Right, exactly.
So I think the same attitude should be taken with creativity using music tech and social media. Put your own spin on it and make it yours and have fun with it. And just, you know, self-plug, subscribe to the DIY Daily newsletter that I put out. And that's part of what I share every morning, is as these new little bits of apps and technology and little new sites that pop up, if you're aware of them, then you can use them. If you're not aware of it, then yeah, you're just going to be doing what everyone else is doing.
Awesome, awesome. So yeah, I know I didn't get a chance to talk about your. Well, I'm going to have to cut it off now. But yeah, you publish. Is it every Monday through Friday? You do the DIY Daily. Is that right?
Yeah, the DIY Daily is a newsletter I put out every Monday to Friday, and I also do a daily podcast that follows the newsletter.
That is amazing. I don't know how you do that. You must have, maybe only get by on 3 hours of sleep, perhaps.
I wake up really early. And again, this is another thing that I looked inward at myself and I was taking my own advice. One of the things that I frequently tell people is you have to be remarkable. You have to be remarkable in whatever you're doing in order for people to talk about it. If you're not remarkable, no one is going to talk about it. And that is how things spread nowadays online, is by people sharing something that they thought was remarkable, either remarkably funny, remarkably sad, remarkably touching, whatever. But if you don't stand out, then no one's going to post your music on their wall. So I was looking at myself saying, how do I grow myself as a personal brand, as a company, or whatever? It's like, well, am I doing anything remarkable? So it's like, well, what would be remarkable? Well, how about putting out 7 podcasts a week?
Wow.
Well, that's kind of remarkable. How about doing a newsletter every day? The newsletter actually was initially 7 days a week until a friend told me, like, dude, you're going to crash and burn. At least take the weekends off. So I reluctantly, I still in the back of my mind, I'm like, it's not remarkable enough.
Damn, I'm leading 5 days a week, yeah. Slacker.
But also getting up and getting myself into that routine of doing the daily newsletter and doing the daily podcast, it starts my day off in the right way. And it gives me enough energy and enthusiasm and motivation and inspiration to get my day going so that I can do everything else that I want to do. So it no longer is a chore. It's a pleasure. And I'm just glad to share it with people.
Awesome. Could you mind sharing what the total time it takes you to do the newsletter and the audio podcast from start to finish? I know you get up early, but
the quickest I can get it done is in 3 hours.
Wow. Yeah. That is a commitment, man. Five days a week.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it's, you know, and there's been many days where it's taken 4 hours, especially on every morning I go through approximately 275 blogs, and I find the 20 best articles over a variety of different topics that I want to share with that I think, well, that interest me. And, you know, I'm just sharing my interests with people. So sometimes there'll be, especially like in early January, where all the blogs are quiet and it's like, it's really hard to find enough stories to share with people. So on slow news days, sometimes it takes a little longer to compile, but it's still a good process to have.
That's amazing. So where can people, Ryan, find you online, or what are the places that you'd like them to go to?
You bet. Well, I'm at Twitter. I'm at Thorny Bleeder. And of course, there's thornybleeder.com and thediydaily.com.
It's like the Buzz Factor. It's the DIYDaily.com. Those are the two main places. Well, you're a great resource. And this has actually exceeded my expectations of how well this would go. You're a smart guy, and I'm glad that you're a beacon of light out there sharing your your advice and perspective and inspiring musicians. So,
well, fantastic. I really appreciate that. I've been watching you for many years, so it's a real pleasure to have your support and to be on your show. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks a bunch, and thanks everybody for listening, and I'll be back again with another interview or some commentary of my own. It'll probably be once or twice a month instead of 5 days a week, but I'll talk to you all later, folks. So long for now.
Bye-bye.